It's Thursday the 22nd of March and you're listening to the Red Army Rounder. I'm your host Paul Hinton and as ever I'm joined by Sean Phillips and Aaron Wren. Hello there gents.
Is there anything interesting going on in this podcast this week? It's not like we won the league or anything, is it?
Hi, Paul. No, it's quite a slow one, I think. Yeah, not much to talk about. Aaron, how are we?
Well, we done it, so, you know, that's all I need to say. So don't expect much from me tonight, everyone.
Oh, definitely stay tuned in then, folks. We are back, and firstly, apologies for the extended hiatus. An element of sulking after a certain final at the start of March may have had an impact. But we did try to record a show last week before. Yeah. I've lost.
Last week it was.
Last week, and I went to use my computer and the power cable had been chewed through by a hamster. It is a terrible excuse, but it was also 100% true. There we go.
Yet to see the proof.
I have actually bit the cable. I should have taken a photo of it, but it wasn't plugged in because otherwise I could have probably shown you a fried hamster as evidence, but there we go. So not too much to talk about, just the whole of March. We're not going into great detail on a lot of it, mainly due to it not being as important and us not really wanting to talk about a certain game. But I don't know if we've mentioned it yet, but we did win the league for the second year in a row.
We're
definitely going to talk about that. But we'll get on to it momentarily. March started with the Storm game being postponed thanks to the snow and the Challenge Cup final, unfortunately not. Belfast came in and Devils looked decent in the first period, Sean, but Giants seemed to up the physicality and I felt, you know, from about halfway through the second, there was only ever going to be one winner, even though it was quite close on the scoreboard at that time.
Yeah, we should have won that game in the first period, point blank. How we ended up that period, just one goal up, was a criminal. We hit the post twice on one power play. We were all over Belfast, and that was the first stage that I worried about it, was we'd been so dominant and only managed to grab one goal, and we hadn't been clinical enough. And then, as you said, Belfast come out in the second, I could only see one winner at the end of the second period.
Which is, you know, absolutely bizarre, given that we were only a goal down, but it just, and we'd outshot Belfast in that period as well, but Belfast just seemed to want it more, which was absolutely baffling. Aaron, did you sort of sense Belfast, you know, being pretty much out of the league? It was the desperation to get a trophy in Keith's first year?
I think they were the team we were 4 years ago, you know, new coach. And, you know, they just come out to play, and I do think that a couple of our usually week in week out performers didn't turn up, and that didn't help us either, but all in all, you know, there's nothing we can do about it now. It's done, it's over with. I wasn't gutted by the end of the third period. I was just, I think speaking to you two guys in the middle of in between the second and third period, I think we all said the same thing, and we wasn't going to score again that night, so I think it was in my head that it was done and dusted, and it was right, really. Not often that we are, but we was.
Yeah, it's quite an upsetting way to be right. You say about not being too upset. I think Tony Dickin made reference in one of his burning questions not long after the final that I could go back to saying I don't care about the Challenge Cup final, but I do. It was the trophy I wanted the least, but you wouldn't have known it from the sulk I had for a good hour or so, if not more, after the end of the final buzzer. I was very down about it. Aaron, what was, obviously, for the first time that the game faced off at 6 o'clock to allow Belfast time to travel, and did you feel it sort of changed the dynamic of it with it being, you know, a normal home time fixture? And Do you feel it lost a bit of the sort of cup final luster that I think you probably had the year before with Sheffield?
I think, to be honest, I think the whole event in itself was more like a whole game, a home game than a cup final. You know, the way the seating plan arranged, I completely understand it. It must have been a nightmare last year to sell 3,000 tickets individually, basically. As soon as that was announced that we would be sitting in our original seats, and like we none because us as a fan base, we like when we go on away trips, we all sit together, so we like usually make a lot more noise in an atmosphere. We lost that because although it was a good atmosphere for the final, I think the beginning was incredible, but I think we lost that when like the club decided to keep everyone in their home seats. And you know, it just like when you look back to last year, it was like literally the half the rink was Sheffield, it was all orange, and then you look to the other end and it was all red, whereas this Belfast game, although there was a lot more Belfast fans, it was a sea of red, and then the little away block where Belfast fans sit was green or teal, as they call it. So it for me, it did just feel like another home game, and maybe that's sunk into a lot of fans' head and maybe even the players' head, and we got a little bit complacent. But you know, it just felt like a normal home game, and I was a little bit gutted by that because the Challenge Cup final have always been one of my favourite events.
Like, well, yeah, the last 3 years prior to that, you know, the two in Sheffield, one didn't quite go the way we want. And then, as you said, last year's with Sheffield coming to Cardiff, obviously Belfast, you know, with the travel.
Yeah.
I guess Cardiff, obviously, the numbers were always going to be an issue. But, yeah, I think there's just something about afternoon hockey. It just reminds me of the playoffs, and I had that sort of playoff buzz, the two games up in Sheffield, the home game last year, Sean, with that, you know, slightly earlier face off, and you know, it's still daylight, it's a bit brighter, and you've got less time to get ready for the game. And I know I personally, I'd sort of just sunk into, well, I sunk into the bottom of a pint glass, if I'm honest, but it was just like a normal home game in that there was plenty of time to like mill around, and you're almost waiting for things to get going. Whereas, you know, last year with Sheffield, the Sheffield game, I felt like everything was a mad rush. It was like, get to town, see people get down the rink, and it really got it going. But yeah, it was disappointment. But I think, you know, a lot of factors worked against that happening, you know, with the number of fans and, you know, getting balanced over. And I think the club could have allowed face-offs to be earlier and given Belfast a really difficult travel schedule. So, it was sort of kudos to the organisation that they made sure it was on a level playing field. And I'd rather that, and I'd rather win, but yeah, there we go. We played some games after that, which nothing really important happened, so we're not going to talk about it for too long. Beat Edinburgh 8-0. We lost in Sheffield 5-2. Sean, very quickly, with Tom Moody in net, probably one of the most dominant 5-2 to 3-goal defeats I've ever seen. The Devils hit the pipe three times and had so much zone time. I think 9 power plays that we didn't convert. And still a bit of a mystery how we didn't win that game.
Yeah, I think the game we won up there midweek 3-0 a couple of weeks ago, we played as, you know, on that 5-2 defeat, we played as good as that. In my opinion, we were as good. We've played worse in Sheffield and won. I was shocked. I really enjoyed the game. It's not often you go to Sheffield and you sit back and you think, God, I really, really enjoyed a game that we lost. But I genuinely thought it was a very, very good game of hockey. And it was fast paced, and yeah, I thought it was a great game. Disappointed that we lost, obviously, because of how well we played. We didn't deserve to lose that hockey game in a million years. Mustakov's had his one good game in however many against us. He's had terrible ones, and you know, he was due a good performance against us. He finally got one. And yeah, shame, but we, you know, there was a lot of positives to take from it. And I think that the Andrew Law's post-game interview and everything was pretty much exactly that as well, that we played well enough to win, and we were just one of those nights.
Yeah, and I had a chance to bounce back on the Wednesday where I would say a performance of almost equal ability, if not slightly lower. Saw Devils run out comfortable 6-3 victors, which set up a trip to Belfast on the Friday for the Devils where, well, 2 points, we're going to win the league. And in terms of talking, I should go to Aaron now, but there was only one of us over there, so there's only one of us that needs to talk about the game. Sean, I'm not at all jealous, by the way. I'm totally over it. Totally over it. But off you go.
Well, where do I start? What a night. What an absolutely unbelievable night. All in all, you know, there were many more opportunities that we had to win the league. You know, we've played two games since then, which we'll come on to in just a moment. But I was more nervous in that game than I've been nearly all year. My heart was going like, you know, like hell. Every post that was, you know, every shot that Belfast were taking, I was trying to look away and burying my head in the back of the stand. And every shot that we took, that was going wide, and I was cursing and blinding and all over the place. And it was the most emotionally invested I've been in a game, in a long time. And it really, on balance, it may not have meant anything. And I'd had a good trip. I'd really enjoyed my trip with my friends and everything. But that was unbelievable to go over there, spend the money obviously it wasn't, you know, for the reasons that yourself didn't go poor, was the price of it was enormous for what it was. And to have paid it and taken the time and the effort to go out there and see it, and celebrate with the team who were, you know, I loved the fact that they were given the trophy on the ice afterwards. I thought that was fantastic. I don't think anybody knew it was in the building, to be quite honest with you. And
a big, big shout out to Chris Herbert for driving the trophy over there in complete secrecy.
Well done.
It's a nice little surprise.
Yeah. The game obviously was, I think we were pretty poor. Our first was brutal. Not a good period of hockey at all. We looked very, very sloppy. We looked like there was a title on the line, and we just panicked. We didn't play our game. Passes weren't going tape to tape. Shots weren't good or hard. Or, you know, we weren't driving to the net. We weren't physical, winning enough battles. Especially with Belfast playing Chris Trull, who's, you know, not been, you know, he's an import goalie, but by no means is he their best goalie. With Jackson Whistle was missing out due to injury. David Rutherford returned to the lineup. But when I heard that Chris Trull was playing a couple of hours before the game, and I was at that time, I thought, yeah, you know, this could be the night. And then we hit the pipe in the first minute, and we went on to hit the pipe another two or three times. And I thought, yeah, maybe this isn't going to happen. And I was worried about it going to overtime or penalty shots with a guy like David Rutherford on Belfast team who just loves a breakaway. But then luckily we didn't have to go through that. Andrew Hawthorne picks up the puck in his own zone and just thinks he's going to go for a little skate and throws it up straight upstairs. And the block went absolutely crazy. You know, there was only 20, 30 of us there on that Friday night, but what a night we had. What an absolutely unbelievable night. We're speechless all night, really. I genuinely couldn't stop smiling. Nothing was going to put me down that night. To be there was brilliant. To have the trophy and be in the photographs and have the team, you know, celebrate with the fans, it was awesome. It was a night which I'll remember for a long, long time.
I'm really pleased for you, Sean.
Oh, thank you, Paul.
genuinely, like, for everyone who made the trip over, you said it was such an expense. Then I think nearly everyone apart from a couple booked after the game on Wednesday where flights were high of 150 as soon, well, even before the final buzzer against Sheffield. So it was not a cheap trip at all. So I was really pleased for sort of everyone made over, but especially like yourself and other friends who were over there, that they hadn't spent all that money for nothing. And I thought I'd be gutted on the night, like, if we'd won it, and I totally wasn't. I was absolutely buzzing just watching it on the webcast in the flat with a couple of friends. And yeah, it was a brilliant night anyway. And I just called up the game sheet just to remind myself of the order of the goals and whatnot. And Ben Bams has now been credited with the assist for the goal for the league winning goal from Andrew Hoffman, which there was some debate about why it hadn't been awarded on the night. So that was all sorted. I think that result meant that we won the league.
So I can confirm after extensive research, countless people
just checked the standings.
I just checked the standings, and I think it does mean that we did win the league.
So, like 15 minutes into the podcast and only just mentioning that we won the league. So, yeah, it's good that we're not going on about it. We've been really restrained and sort of just held ourselves back. Because you think winning the league twice in a row, you'd really talk about that a lot. But
yeah, you'd make merchandise and everything, wouldn't you?
Oh, all the merchandise. That was Friday night. Aaron, anything to add about the game? There's loads to add, but
considering
I thought you were just going on a vow of silence after saying at the start you weren't going to talk.
No, considering that in the cup final, I did think Andrew Hotham had a poor game. He completely and utterly made up for it in that final. It was I was watching it in Morgan's house with Morgan, and I just said, he's going to do it. Danced around two players, one-on-one, boom, roof of the net, and that is all she wrote. Two-time back-to-back Elite League bloody champions.
Are we?
Oh, I just want to point out as well that also meant it was we three-peated the conference that night.
Woo!
Woo! Raise the banner!
Seven trophies in 4 years. Name another team that's done that. Name one. There probably is one, but don't call me out on it. I was just being dramatic.
There's probably a couple, to be fair. It was awesome to do it with 20 seconds left. Is any game that you win in the last minute is special, even when they mean absolutely nothing. And to win the league like that was awesome. And
I'm glad we did it like that. The drama of it was incredible. Those 20 seconds were really tense as well. I'm not sure about you at home watching the webcast.
I was massively, you know, I was not happy.
I was massively stressed.
Even when Belfast had a face-off and the clock stopped with a second on, but it had stopped late, and I sat at home going, there's another second or two to go on there. And then they sort of ticked it up. I was like, stop ticking up. 2.5 seconds, that's enough. And, even those 2 seconds, I was like, it's not done. Don't get excited.
Oh, and Matt Pope's goal was a worldie as well.
Yeah.
Oh, it was, yes. Yes. Speaking of worldies, Sunday. Not a worldie of a game. What a worldie of a day. Absolutely brilliant day. Sheffield came to Cardiff and there was a game of hockey. I didn't watch a lot of it.
Was there?
It did happen. Some people weren't happy with the performance from the Devils. I was amazed that we had enough players sober enough to stand up on skates. So, you know, it's all about the way you look at things. I know I wouldn't have been sober. I wasn't sober, but I just find myself something like an alcoholic on the podcast. I really need to stop talking. Say all of our listeners.
Or just stop drinking, because then you will definitely not be an alcoholic.
Oh, that sounds a lot less fun. I'll just stop talking about it. which is the sign of an alcoholic, I believe. Drinking in secret. Sheffield, what a strange detour. Sheffield went 2-0 up in a absolutely flat first period. I can't remember who we rested. We started Ben Bounds. Did we rest anyone?
Joey Martin, I think.
No, Martin's on the game sheet. Yeah, he's on the game sheet, but he definitely didn't play. So, so Devils were full strength, but you know, limited minutes of our top players. And
Bryce Reddick played forward.
Yeah, Joey Martin. I'm surprised. I thought you had to list the right amount of
The way the Elite League website puts players on sometimes isn't always the most accurate. So
right, okay.
It's not always worth
understandable. So
yes, Sheffield went 3-0. Devils almost came back and won it, playing extremely under strength. I was the third period showed that what we could do, and I think that game would be a lot more concerning to me if I was a Sheffield fan, in that we were clearly not trying very hard. and Sheffield edged a one goal game. So, and that was the game. And what an absolutely outstanding night in the bar afterwards. Proper good time, sort of a brilliant atmosphere, buzzing, plenty of people stayed back, even though it was a Sunday. And just a really, you know, you had Craig Moore running around like a loon in his full kit, getting people to drink out of the Monty, all sorts. It was just a Neil Francis singing Grace Kelly by Mika. What, that's something I never thought would see happen.
And a Prince tribute act.
And yes, a random Prince tribute act who arrived and started singing. It wasn't karaoke, but hey.
When you win the Monty.
When you win the back to back as well, you do what you want.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable night. The game was just a warm up act, really, wasn't it? No one really cared about the game. They just wanted to see the trophy.
Yes, yeah. We just couldn't do it without doing 60 minutes of ice hockey first.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. I'd pay 20. I would pay the price of admission to feel that good.
Oh, yes. I'd have probably paid more for the hockey not to happen.
Mm. Yeah, you're probably right, yeah.
And definitely feel the same when we come on to last night's game against Manchester. Which seems like a good segue into last night's game against Manchester, where Devils properly showed that they were resting players. Ben Bams not even on the bench. Tom Moody getting another start. And then Bryce Reddick, Tyson Strachan and Joey Martin all not icing and not dressing. And I was thinking about this earlier, Sean, and you'll probably... It's not a stat, but I reckon that Tom's Rutkus must have at least doubled his ice time in that one game last night that he's had all season for us.
Yeah, you're probably right. Not far off the truth, yeah.
And you're playing practically first-line minutes with Matt Pope and Patrick Aslin, and really put a good shift in. And, you know, I think he'll have done himself well in terms of putting his hand up to make sure he gets signed up next year. And it was really good to see, and hopefully we'll see it again over the next couple of weeks. Next couple of games, sorry. Anything at all that you want to talk about from the game, Aaron? It was... as flat as you'd expect. Devils lost by 3 with Storm getting a couple of empty netters. Anything at all you want to add? Any insight on the game or sort of thoughts on it?
It was the only game that, bar the Sheffield game obviously, that I was comfortable with losing. Once I seen that we was resting so many players and we wasn't starting or even playing Bounds, I fully did not expect us to win. There was no need for us to ice a full strength team. Manchester, they can be quite a physical side, and there was no point in risking like Bounds possibly getting run, Martin getting a knock and being unable to play, we limited minutes, and I genuinely do think that, all right, yeah, we lost and it wasn't a great performance and it was absolutely mind-numbing to watch, but hey, we're two-time league champions for a reason, and this is my take on it. Lord's doing something right. Last year, I think we pretty much iced a full team all year, even after we won the league. And what happened in the playoff final? Alright, granted, we did ice two extra periods, but who was gassed in the second, and coming towards the end of the second period of overtime? The Cardiff Devils, not Sheffield Steelers. Why? Probably because they had more, they probably rested players, whereas we didn't. So we was a tired team. And Lord's doing something right by resting players and making sure we haven't got tired legs by the time we get to that stage. There's no one, all right, people pay for admission. We all do it. And you can't expect a result every week just purely because I'd rather win the playoff final than beat Manchester in a nothing game. I'd rather win the playoff title than beat Milton Keynes and Belfast in the, do you know what I mean? So,
I no, think, and 100%
agree. I think people took the wrong thing on it. Yeah, we all want to win. We win games, but if you win the league 2 weeks before you need to, what's the rush? And why do you need players to be playing ice in 30 minutes a game? I thought it was just ridiculous. Like the way people complained on Twitter and stuff.
I agree wholeheartedly. I think, it was a team going through the motions, but I didn't feel like we were properly like playing rec hockey. Manchester were at full strength. We didn't get blown away by them. Mark Lewis dropped the gloves when Hansen had sort of got a bit feisty with someone before and threw a bit of an elbowy hit at Lewis, so he took exception to that. Yeah, I don't know what people want. You know, I think Sean, you tweeted it earlier that people would be going just as mad if, or probably even more mad if Joey Martin had played and, you know, taking a puck to the knee and missed the playoffs or, you know, something. I always think like when you see players blocking shots in games like that, I'm like, oh God, don't get injured blocking a shot in a game that just doesn't matter. And it really doesn't matter. The league's won, it's done. Momentum's one thing, but having a fully fit squad's another. And take your pick on what you'd rather. If we're resting players who've got little niggling injuries, I'm happy to lose the next couple of games and go in with a fully fresh team and try and start some new momentum against Coventry or Bray, because I'd rather that than having momentum and half a team bandaged up and hoping they're going to make it through the game. And as Aaron said, it really isn't exciting. It's not great to watch, but it's quite nice sitting back and thinking, do you know what? I don't care about this. The team don't care about this. We haven't got to care about this. We got some games we're going to care about. We're champions. Champ.
Yeah.
You know, if we get Brayhead, we're playing a week tomorrow and we've still got two games to play. If Cardiff Fire could play for us against Belfast and Milton Keynes, I'd send them out and do it. Yeah, I'm that much don't care about this weekend's games.
No, I totally agree. You know, that's one of those games where, like, you look at, just as an example now, right? You look at that year that Belfast won the league in what, mid-January. How boring has the rest of that season been for their fans? Because I'm bored already. I am bored already, and we've played two meaningless games, and we've got two more to go. And I have, you know, zero interest in the hockey. You know, I love hockey. I love watching it. I like watching it as a neutral sometimes. But watching it as a neutral, knowing that two teams that want to win it are going for it, is better than watching my own team, which I love, not care about it. And I don't have a problem with them not caring about it, because, like you said, we're the champs. They've worked their asses off for, you know, however many months of the year.
52 games.
Yeah, for 52 games. And they have busted, you know, obviously they've been the odd game here or there, but they have busted a gut and, you know, bled, cried and everything for that jersey. And what? So they want to go out and have a couple of drinks on a Sunday night after they've won a league title and, you know, bomb it on the Wednesday? Yeah. All the power to them. You know, if they want to do it for the rest of the year and then, you know, just about limp to the playoff final and win the playoff final, I don't care. If they're going to go and win things, they can do whatever the hell they want. Mm-hmm. You know, not to say they should go and beat old ladies with a stick as they cross the road or anything, you know, that's, you know.
I'm glad you've drawn the line there.
It may just be taking the line, you know, it may just be taking things a little bit too far. But the guys have earned it. Let them go and enjoy themselves. Just look after the old ladies. I do understand that, you know, people pay their ticket money and they expect a performance or they expect to be entertained. But like you said, we didn't ice the Cardiff Fire. You know, we still iced a reasonably good team. You know, that team would have, you know, that team could have won that game. You know, I have no doubt about it.
We were away from winning
there. No, there were stages where we could have won the game. And we picked it up a little bit later on. And, you know, but did it, you know, if it didn't mean anything to me as a fan and the players, I just don't get why people are getting so worked up about it. Let the guys have their break in the rest. Try different things. I personally thought we should have given Jordan Lorde some ice time, just to try things out. Maybe, you know, 10 minutes. I think it would have been a good experience for him. But we didn't. You know, we still put us, you know, we put the third choice GB goalie in, who's won us games before, who played in Sheffield and played in one of our best performances of the year. You know, I don't see an issue with it myself. As a long time fan and season ticket holder, I genuinely, I'm not bothered by it. Good on him. Let him enjoy it. And when things get important in Brea next Friday and they're ready and amped up and good to go, you know, if they turn up on Friday, if they turn up and play in Brea or Coventry or whatever it is and play like that, I'll be livid. I'll, you know, want to beat them with a stick.
Yeah.
But we don't have to worry about it. Save your leg, save the energy. If Joey Martin had gone out there and broken a knee, I would be livid and people would be calling for Lord's head for playing our star player in a nothing game against a team that have got, you know, they've got nothing to play. They had nothing to play for really on that game. And it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Lord, we couldn't have won either way. You know, if we had iced a full team and players had got injured, we would have been the stupidest club in the country. And I'd be angry. I would be angry as a season ticket holder and long-term fan who wants us to be successful. And if we don't play them and we lose, then we're the worst club in the world and we don't care about the fans. It's drivel, total drivel.
What would you, the way I look at it, what would you rather be in that yesterday's game situation? Would you rather be Elite League champions, resting some players ready for the playoffs, or would you rather be a Manchester Storm team who's won their conference and playing a full-strength team and playing as hard as they can to beat the league champions and probably going to gas themselves up ready for the playoffs coming up? I'd rather be the Cardiff Devils.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's no contest to it. Do you want to be league champs or do you not want to be league champs? Do you want to be in the position where the last game of the year means something? No. If I could win the league, I'd win it on the, you know, however many points you need, I'd win it in October. By all means. Genuinely wouldn't bother me. Let's win it in October next year and have however many meaningless games. Doesn't bother me in the slightest.
Yeah, I think that's rant done. And on a very, very tiny note as well, in the original fixtures, that Manchester game wasn't even there. So, you know, it wasn't ever part of the playoff thinking. It's a rearranged game, so even more reason to take it easy in my mind.
Drew Parris scored a home goal in an Elite League game.
He did. He also got another one as well. So he scored outside Murrayfield.
Ah, he did score a home goal in the CHL. Quite a big goal this year. Quite a big goal, I'll say.
Yeah. To be fair, yeah, you know, if you can only score one home goal until March, do it to be Davos.
Make it that one, yeah.
Yeah. Do it right if you're going to do it. Yes, so usually we do player of the week. I think it's probably safe to say it's more of a player of the month this month, or this show even. I'll go first. There's too many games to really think about, but there's one moment that stands out a little bit above everything else, I think, and that's going to get my vote. So Mr. Hotham gets it for his league-winning goal. Aaron?
Is that even a question, though?
You know, we're just going through the formalities, aren't we?
All right, okay. The guy who went pretty much coast to coast, roofed it, and won us the league. It can't be no one else. It's Andrew Hotham. Sean, if you vote for anyone else, then
you're sacked.
Yeah, you're sacked, and I genuinely mean it.
Okay, my vote goes to Ben Bounce for the assist on the game on the league winning goal.
That's the end of Red Army Rundown.
Andrew Hotham, yeah, all over it. Just get over it.
Excellent. We apologise massively. We've already apologised for the hiatus, but we had a lot of burning questions on the show that never was. Sean, if you've got them there, I think most of them, if not all of them, still stand, so we can rattle through and give you your answers better late than never, guys.
Yep, we are going to start with Tony Dickin at Tony Baloney, who says, do we tend to pull Bouncy too soon in the third when we're behind? Obviously referring to the Challenge Cup final, that tweet came to us straight after that. Paul?
I'm always torn on it. I think on balance. No, I think, and I've got no stats or evidence to back it up, but I feel like under Lord, we score more empty netters than I've ever seen with the Devils. It would make sense. It's the best I've ever seen the Devils, but we're usually a pretty good team with a net empty, and you know, we score quite often. If you think back to the Nottingham game in January where we came back from 4-0, we'd scored an empty netter and we were a width of a post away from scoring two to tie the game up. I think pulling in with 4 minutes left, it's a bit of a gamble, but you know, I think I'd rather lose by that extra goal than not go all out. And yeah, I'm quite happy with it overall.
Alan?
I think if you get the opportunity to do it, then I think do it. You know, you're all right. You're going to be at an advantage in a way, but you've got to be careful about the way you do it. But I think we do it well. Our power play, like when we're on the power play, I think we hold the puck well enough not to worry about a turnover, although we do have probably the highest number of turnover goals in the Elite League. But I do think that we hold the puck well enough and we move it well enough that we don't have to worry about it that much. So yeah, if we got, it could be, all right, maybe not 10 minutes, but maybe 3-4 minutes. I'm happy for Lord the Yank Bounds and go for it. Cause if it's a cup final, you know, you've got to throw all your eggs in one basket at that point and go guns for glory, because a team like Belfast with good D-men, they can collapse well. So, you know, you've got to give yourself the best opportunity you can, and an extra man advantage is always going to give you that, isn't it?
Excellent.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's the general. No, we don't. Greg Hewish asks, why do we have a fourth line? Is the development of players like Rex being hampered due to no ice time? Aaron, you go first on that one.
Right. I really do think that we really have a fourth line, and when we do, it's when we are double shifting players like Martin. I did see Elmer do it at the beginning of the year, and some of our key players are double shifting, and I do think it dampens us as a team, because then come towards the end of the game, they're icing more minutes. Like if you take Joey Martin, for example, if he's double shifting, playing top line minutes and fourth line minutes, then he's on the power play and a penalty kill. Come the last 3 minutes where you need a goal, his legs are going to be gone. You know, he's going to be tired. I do think we should take a step back on that. And I do think maybe it's hard to like put, because every game each year is so important because we need to win the league. It's hard for players like Rutkus to get a good look in because, you know, he's not a fully developed talent. Be honest, he's not a big physical player like usually fourth line players are. And he's still learning the way the Elite League plays. So to give a player like him minutes is unfair because, like, you put your fourth line out and he's playing, he gets turned over, they score. His confidence is going to be knocked so hard, it's not really fair. And, like, it's so much pressure as well. Like, I don't know. I do think we need a fourth line, like, so bad, because I think that could have helped us win the Challenge Cup final. You know, we was double-shifting players after the second period and, you know, we shortened our bench, like, pretty much as soon as we went down. And we need that we need a good fourth line who can grind, turn the puck over and, you know, help us out. But it does hinder development. Like, if you look at Sheffield, they got Cole Shudra and Liam Kirk, who are both fantastic players, and they get regular ice time. But
I think I agree with you to a certain extent. I think the fourth line has been damaged. We've struggled to get out there since the injury to Craig Moore. Craig Moore came in, sort of proven himself, and was starting to get a regular shift. As you said, you know, Rutkus is young, and I don't think he's hampering his development at the moment. If you look at him on the bench, he's always stood right in front of Lord. Lord's talking to him even when he's not getting ice time, so he's getting that exposure at the higher level. And then, you know, games like yesterday shows how good it is for him to be in and around the team, I think. You know, he's obviously had loads of minutes playing with two really good players, and that was where he had to put his stake in and say, look, I'm good enough, I can be trusted. And that's the first step then to getting regular ice time. And Craig Moore did it. Really hope to see Craig Moore back. And then you've got four players vying for the spots, you know, if the squad is as it is now. And yeah, that's got to be good for the team. I think, as you know, playing the fourth line with players double shifting makes sense to me in sort of games where at the moment you it'd be a bit of a risk playing someone like Rutkus, you know, as you said, young, inexperienced. And as long as that's rotating around, and I've noticed towards the end of the year, there were more players doing it. Like Farina was down there, Crowder was doing it, Haddad, Martin, almost. It was only ever one, each player was probably only doing once, maybe twice. So the fourth line in general makes sense, but I think we do shorten the bench too quickly. The first period in the Challenge Cup final, I was really pleased we were playing our fourth line a lot. And I don't know what this, we were up, and I don't know what it was that thought, right, we're going to limit the ice time of Batch and Myers for the last two periods. I can understand for the last period or even half a period maybe at the end, but I think shortening the bench too soon is probably our biggest criticism. But then you know what's going on the ice. It's, it could be systems, but you know, it was fourth liners for Belfast that scored the winning goals in the end. So yeah, that's my take on a fourth line. Sean? Do you disagree at all?
Nope, totally agree. Okay, next one is also from Greg Hewish. Burning question. In the week where we witnessed Matthew Myers grab his 500th point, do you think we'll ever produce players like him in the future? Should there be more emphasis on youth development?
Sean, asking you that one.
Do I think we'll ever produce players like him in the future? Yeah, I do. I think Matthew Myers has got... the luxury of being a big body. I think as long as we try and produce the right type of players, then we'll get another Matthew Myers. We'll get another Mark Richardson. I think the fact that now we have a dual pad facility and the ice time is there for the juniors to get on more often is massive. I genuinely think, you know, you look at Chef, you know, Aaron mentioned Cole Shudra, Liam Kirk. You know, they've had a couple of players come up through the ranks. They're only now sort of seeing those players come to the forefront in 2018. Ice Sheffield opened in, you know, the early 2000s. So, I think in 10, 12 years, maybe we'll, you know, see our first real prospect coming up. Based on the fact that now we have that two-part facility, and it's taken Sheffield that long to do it in an academy that's arguably the most successful in Britain. I'd struggle to find a junior system which produces more high-end talent. So yeah, I think it'll come. It'll take time. Now we're in the facility, we have got that, the ability to do that. And I think, you know, as for the emphasis on it, we're a professional club. We, as an organisation, don't have a duty to produce players for the national system. I'd like to see us do it. And I think that if as we get more of the players coming through the ranks of the junior system, that it'll be something which, you know, the coaching system have to look at. To stay on top, we need to have some of the best young British players. And the best place to do that is at home, you know, to keep our eyes on them and all that sort of thing. So, emphasis, no. A watchful eye, yes.
I don't think I agree to the extent that it's not for the Devils to run a whole youth development scheme like we did back in the day, but I think there should be a bigger emphasis on it. If you talk about getting those homegrown players through, at a really base level, we're a professional club. What are the cheapest players to have? They're the homegrown players, because you don't need to house them. You don't just need to get them a car. They're probably not being paid quite as much. And yeah, if you can get yourself a Liam Kirk coming through, admittedly, he's probably not going to stay, at least in the short term. But, you know, players go back to where they're from, and you think Liam Kirk, if he comes back to Britain, is going to be a hot favourite to go to Sheffield, assuming he even goes. But yeah, I think Sheffield's sort of a leading the way at the moment. And yeah, I wouldn't surprise me in the next couple of years that obviously the Devils have had a massive change you know, since the new ownership, a new rink. Devils are now obviously running the Ice Arena Wales, so there's a lot of turnover, but I wouldn't be surprised to see a bigger focus on that potentially in the coming years. But who knows? That's just my thought on it.
I got something to add to it, right? If you look at, this is short term now, obviously long term, like with the way that, like Sean said about the development and stuff, it's going to come, but it's the matter of when. What are we going to do when Mark Richardson and Matthew Myers retire? Because, them two players, we rely on them so much. Like, Mark Richardson is probably the staple Cardiff Devils D man. He does everything right and very rarely puts a foot wrong. Matthew Myers is probably one of the best penalty killers in the league. And he offers so much more as well. So when they retire, is there anyone that we're going to replace them with? Because obviously we need to run with a certain amount of Brits and we need Brits to improve our game. But when they retire, what are we going to do?
Sign one from somewhere else. Belfast, I think they produced one junior player. Like they produced a very small number.
No, yeah, I'm not saying produce, because that's what this
just,
is what I mean. This
just
is
signing from elsewhere. There's players are all okay. Like David Clark is leaving Nottingham now. That's probably his bigger hole to fill for Nottingham.
But
Matthew Myers would be for us.
Look how many Brit players Nottingham got though, compared to us.
I would
the play
almost out. Exactly the same because they play the same number of imports as us.
Okay, then.
High-end Brits is what you're looking at.
We ice three regularly, Bounds, Richie and Myers. Batch doesn't really get a lot of ice time. And in my opinion, I love the guy, great player, but I don't think he's a top-end Brit. I can't think of a player that's a third-line, fourth-line grinder like Myers that's a British player. Do you see what I'm saying? I don't see a stay-at-home D-man who is that good.
But then, I can answer it. There isn't a team in the Elite League with a British defenceman as good as Mark Richardson. So
exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. Where do we go from there?
Well, we just do what every other team is doing. And you have another high-end import D-man to replace Mark Richardson. And for example, you've got Paul Crowder filling a third-line spot at the moment. There's a third-line Brit goes in there and you have a high-end D-man at the back. That's the type of thing that you'd be looking at for Mark Richardson. Mark Richardson is such a huge luxury. The bigger one is Ben Bams, because that'll change the whole makeup of the team. If he decides to go to Europe or move on elsewhere, then that's a huge gap. And it is an issue, but, you know, there's teams around Britain that have survived for years without producing youth players and just go off and cherry pick them. And you know, we were always the smaller team that looked at them thinking, oh, that's terrible. But we're now a team with enough financial clout that we could go off and do that. And I think that's probably what we would look to do. Losing Mark Richardson, Matthew Myers, Ben Bounds, it would affect any team. But a lot of teams are in the same boat. You know, Ben O'Connor leaves Sheffield.
Yeah, that's what I mean. There's too many British players around the same age that when they retire, it's going to leave a massive gap in a lot of teams. That's what I was trying to get. Short-term plan to cover these players. I think the only team that really has the, maybe not quality, because like you said, Liam Kirk and Cole Schroeder may not stay. But I think they are the only two that really develop into, well, they're not even like Jonathan Phillips type players, because I think they're both really good. I don't know. I just think there's so much of a hole to fill when Todd Shields retires, Matt Myers, Mark Richardson.
I think in answer to that question is you'll see a relaxing of the import rules again, because you're right. They're not there, but they're not there en masse at the moment. And
it's not just us. They're not there for everybody.
It is. And if you look back sort of to where your Myers, Jonathan Phillips, Colin Shields all came through, they probably would have started development at a different time, and whether there was more focus on it because hockey was a bit newer in most, like in Cardiff, in Sheffield. So it was like a new thing. You had a lot of players starting to skate, but for whatever reason, development went off the table with the Super League, and then a lot of money lost where that went wrong. And potentially that's where those issues are. So it's almost too late to get players to replace those. If they're retiring in the next year or two, you know, you can't develop a youngster to do that now, because if you're going to develop a youngster to be that good, you've got to start earlier than means they'd be ready. But I think someone like Craig Moore has got more than enough potential to fill a Matt Myers sort of role or position on a team.
But then is that dampening Craig Moore's like projection? Because is Craig Moore going to be like, we play him as a fourth line grinder and a person who turns the puck over, but like, remember the goal he scored in the CHL? Like, that was a worldie one-on-one over the shoulder on possibly one of the best goalkeepers he's ever faced in his life. Like, he's got the skills. Is like, are we dampening his future by playing him as a fourth line essentially grinder? Do you know what I mean?
If that's something that bothers him, he needs to go to a lower end team or leave Britain, because I'd be very surprised to see a Brit come through and crack the top six in a top half of the table side in the next 5 years. He did it. He's not there anymore. There's probably Robert Dowd, and he's not even doing it anymore. He's the only Brit that was playing top six in our conference.
Possibly Robert Farmer.
I'm not
arguing the point. Yeah. I totally agree with your point. And the league is going, you know, it's another stage case of the league is going forward and British players aren't really.
Like Craig Peacock, alright, this was a few years ago, had 73 points, 24 goals in a season. That's more than most.
What season was that? Out of interest?
12.
That was, you know, the league was a different league then.
I'm just saying, like, there's not going to be another player who's going to be able to do that. Even his last season in Belfast, still putting up 34 points. That's probably one of the highest numbers as a Brit.
Craig Peacock was very good, but where the league is now, there's no British player or British prospect that is good enough to crack the top six in our conference. And probably for a good number of teams outside of our conference. And that is just the harsh reality of it. And that won't change in I've said 5 years, because players coming through in the next 5 years are already 17, 18 and have developed. And, you know, I can't see it. I'd love to be wrong, but you'd already have seen them. You'd already have heard about them, much in the same way that Liam Kirk. Liam Kirk is the one exception to that rule, if he's in the elite league, I would imagine. But it's difficult, but it's where British hockey is. We're a very import-focused league. And Brits coming through will get opportunities on the third and fourth line, and they will have to bust a gut and go above and beyond to break the top six. It's doable, but I would be surprised to see any new players doing it in the near future.
At the end of the day, boys, we're in the league.
We're in the league.
Next one from Michael Brain. Looking at the foot of the table, who would you prefer to play, Coventry, Dundee or Brad Clan? This was asked in advance. I don't believe Dundee can qualify now, or if it is, it's very, very tough.
Dundee definitely can't. It's down to Coventry or Brayhead.
Paul?
Oh, given that we've managed to sort out a coach in a hotel for Brayhead on Good Friday, I'm going to say Brayhead for just solely a trip to Scotland.
Aaron?
Coventry, so it's only 2 hours away.
Sure.
Brayhead. I think Coventry have played their best hockey against us all year. It's a Scottish trip. It's good fun. Good Friday makes for a good trip at Easter. And I genuinely think that if there's a ragtag team that can cause issues, it'll be Coventry, because I just don't think they're not a great side, I don't think, but they just seem to have the knack of putting their best for us. And that would, not concern me overly, but I think I just prefer to play against Brayhead. Because point blank, I think the one saving grace as well is Coventry have got a very good goalie. I do think Kevin Astick's a very good goalie. I don't think that Brayhead have got a very good goalie at all. Ryan Nye, I think his name is. Don't rate him at all. So on a purely
on averages
basis, I would rather face off against Brayhead. And lastly, we've got a quick one from Dan Acton. Oh, sorry, two quick ones from Dan Acton. Which was check to the head. When is it 2+10 or 5+ game? Paul, I think it's a pretty
2-10 is any checking to the head. I'm pretty sure 5+ game or 5+ match has to be given if there's an injury. I'm not sure what the distinction is, but I'm assuming. Well, the question was relating to Tyson Strachan and Zach Fitzgerald's in Sheffield in the game that we talked about earlier. Fitzgerald threw a check to the head. There wasn't an injury. I think the ref obviously deemed there was no intent, so it's called as a 2-10. Tyson Strachan's, regardless of intent, there was blood on it, so it has to be a match if there's an injury on the play. So it's intent and or injury, and Strachan's injury meant it was a match, and the fact there was no intent meant he only sat a one game ban.
And the last one from Dan Acton was, again, also before, well, a number of weeks ago, you're looking back at this one now, was that the atmosphere at Ice Arena Wales has dropped over the last couple of games. Have the fans began to come complacent? We haven't won anything yet. Aaron, your thoughts on the atmosphere the last couple of weeks, you know, before the title was signed, sealed and delivered?
I don't think it is anything great. But I think sometimes the fan base react to the wrong things, like instead of reacting to like pretty moves or, when like Joey Haddad does a toe drag around a player or Joey Martin stick handles through three players, they don't I don't want Cartel's fans to jump on my back right now, but usually like they only really usually cheer hits and fights, and I do think that's what gets our fan base going anyway, is big hits and big momentum swingers, let's put it then. And I just don't think we've had enough of them, and I don't mind that. We've won games. It lessens risk on injury. Like, I think Craig Moore's injury was one where he went in for an hit and missed and, you know, done his knee in, which is sadly why we haven't seen him all year. I just think, I don't think there's been enough momentum swingers. We've either come out already, you know, fired up winning games, like from the get-go, or games have been wrapped up after the second period, and you know, it's just hard. Like, I think our fan base relies too much on the team doing things to get going than we should do, because you know, in any sport, the fans are always the sixth man on the ice, so to speak. So yeah, it hasn't been great, and some points it's been fantastic, and you can't hear yourself thinking stuff, but other times it's just been abysmal. And
I think it's boring. There's an element of chicken and egg in what you said, in that is it the fans' job to get the team going, or is it the team's job to throw a momentum swinging hit to get the fans going? And it's, you know, that great debate sort of. Whose job is it? It's obviously the players' job. They're the ones paying, being paid with paying to be there. So, but you know, you'll always get different people. And I think, you know, obviously Dan's question came in after the final and before wrapping up the league. And I've sort of felt with the atmosphere for a few weeks now, it's almost been a bit of a hangover from that 7-1 game against Sheffield, in that we're not going to see a game like that in Cardiff for a long time. It was a very special night. Team came out fired up, the crowd were fired up, the result went our way, the goals went our way. It was close for quite a lot of it, and just the whole, it was Sheffield as well. Paul Thompson was waving his arms around, and it was just a perfect storm to make a perfect atmosphere. And it's almost like, because we haven't got that, it's, the atmosphere isn't clicking as much because it's not where it was. And to be honest, it's the atmosphere now is probably very similar to how it's been most of the season, but we're comparing it to that one. There's an absolutely great bunch of questions there. Apologies once more for getting to them a little bit late. Hopefully, better late than never has won the day. Even though we had a little bit of a tangent on the British situation. Please get your questions in for the next couple of weeks. We will have shows. Why is it being kept away from hamsters and all sorts? So ask your questions. We'll answer them in next week's show. If you've got any opinions on some of the answers that we've given or anything that we've said tonight, tweet us, let us know, and we'll tell you why we're wrong, but we'll debate it. Won't say that. Usually at this point we would preview our upcoming games. We've got Belfast at home on Saturday, Milton Keynes at home on Sunday, and I don't have to say our catchphrase of it being a huge weekend. It's not at all, and I don't think any of us are expecting anything special from the games, and don't think we need to say any more than that on the subject. We'll be back next week. If anything out of the ordinary does happen, we'll discuss it, but hopefully another load of burning questions for us to wade through. Thank you for listening. If we haven't mentioned it, we have won the Elite League. So, you know, go Devils, have a little party. If you hadn't realised, it's been kept on the down low. So from the Elite winning Sean, the Elite League winning Aaron, and myself, thank you for listening, and that is your Red Army Roundup.
Chabioli, chabioli, wee, wee, wee. The Devon side, every single